We're talking today with 3rd District Congressman Frank Lucas. Congressman, several things wanted to visit with you about. First of all, it seems like we're getting farm bill implementation rolling along. I know that you continue to monitor this, even though you've stepped down from the chairmanship. The latest thing that's come out is this basically definition, who is a farmer actively engaged in farming? Your thoughts on this latest move from USDA and overall how they're doing, you know, in regards to implementation?
First of all, Ron, I think the process is best described as slowly but surely. There's a lot of dramatic changes between the 2014 Farm Bill and the old 2008 bill. It just is taking some time and effort. I think in a number of areas, whether it was making decisions about your acres or the sign-up about which kind of protection you wanted, revenue or price, the department's made the right decisions by some temporary delays. But those kind of things are coming to a conclusion. Folks are coming to a focus. Now we're into the issue of a definition of who a farmer is, what a farmer is. We'll work through that. I'd also note that there's some efforts going into some issues dealing with how generic base should be handled. Some of our listeners are well aware that cotton transitions over to the stacked income protection plan. There's some questions about how your acres should be counted for crop purposes and whatever. We'll work through all that sort of stuff. This week, we'll have the FSA director on the national level and the RMA director in front of the Ag Committee. I know Chairman Conaway will have questions for him. For them, I'll have questions too. But by and large, there's growing pains, but slowly, Ron, we're getting there.
It seemed like the one wrinkle that never got done to your satisfaction was that APH issue. You know, unfortunately, I guess we just have to wait one more year for that as far as our wheat guys are concerned.
You're a wheat guy, exactly. The department was finally able to come around and figure out how to address everybody else but winter wheat growers. And, of course, that is a core group in the 3rd District of Oklahoma in my part of the southwestern United States. I'm still to this moment frustrated about that, but I promise you, the Secretary and I, over the course of the last year, have had more discussions than either one of us would ever care to admit in public, both in public and private, and I did everything within my power. We're just where we are, and wheat folks who should have been treated differently will be treated the same in the next cycle, but we just could not get USDA and D.C. there this time.
Regarding a hearing that was held today, I don't know that you had a chance to attend, but it's a subject I know you're very familiar with, country of origin labeling, one of the ag subcommittees talking about this issue, really getting closer to an end game, it looks like, right now. Are you thinking at this point that there'll be a real move to try to repeal COOL within Congress?
It appears, Ron, that when the final ruling comes down from WTO, we will lose again as we have lost before. The mood of the committee, and I think this hearing today, is reminding the new members who have not participated in this discussion before what is entailed. The mood in the committee is this has to be fixed, and if we cannot prevail, think of how many times that the USDA has tried to modify things under the 08 law to try and meet both the WTO requirements and the law requirements. If we cannot be successful, then I think you'll see Chairman Conaway and the committee move language basically to just undo what was done in 2008 and get on with it, especially if the WTO lists a group of the trade court issues a list of counterbalancing, in effect, penalty quotas, penalty fees, penalty taxes on other U.S. products. Where they go with that, I don't have a clue, but it will then bring much of the rest of Congress down on us hard, and this one will come to a focus. So that's what the committee hearing was about, prepare for whatever the WTO final ruling will be.
One thing I know that you've been working on and you've had some success with in concert with your colleague, Mr. Peterson, had to do with EPA and some of the folks that they rely on regarding advice, their scientific advisory panel. Walk me through that and why that you felt that was important, you know, when we start dealing with things like WOTUS.
First of all, Ron, it seems to be impossible at this point in time to have major rewrites of statutes, whether it's the Environmental Protection Agency Act or the Endangered Species Act. If I can't change the flawed overall law, then I have to look at places and ways to try and make what doesn't work work a little bit better. In the case of the Environmental Protection Agency, there was a board created in 1978 called the Science Advisory Board. It's a group that looks over the EPA shoulder of scientists to verify the scientific studies that they do, yes, that the taxpayers pay for, that are then used to justify whatever the rule is created. Right now, the Science Advisory Board has become a group dominated by the EPA. There's a tendency for folks who have taken contracts in past years to do research to be a part of the inner group looking over the EPA's shoulder. What we say in the bill is, and it's now clear both the Science Committee that I serve on and passed across the floor of the United States House, headed to the Senate, we say that the Science Advisory Board has to take public input. We say that anyone who has scientific knowledge and experience that is qualified to offer input in this advisory capacity should be eligible for the board as long as they fully disclose whatever interest they might have in the past or in the present or in the future in the process. Basically, we open the board up to more than just a select few. Now, the EPA director will still appoint these people, but the EPA director would be required to have a broader group and to listen to the public. The board cannot stop the EPA from bad science, but if they from a bad rule, but if they determine the science that was used to make the rule is bad, they bring the public pressure down on the EPA. So, again, if I can't fix the EPA, the law that created it, at least I can improve the way the one entity that looks over their shoulders work, and we'll have a better chance at better rules. And if this is successful in dealing with the EPA, you know, there's similar studies done, similar information gathered by Fish and Wildlife when they do an Endangered Species Act. So if you clean up one scientific review process, there's some others out there that may need that same cleaning. So, Ron, if I can't fix the big package, I've got to try to fix the pieces so we get better science out. What's the old line? Garbage in, garbage out. Well, I'm trying to make sure that the science used in these rules is not garbage.
I guess speaking of garbage, your thoughts on some of the congressional efforts and talk anyway regarding rolling back WOTUS or trying to push back on EPA regarding WOTUS?
I think there's a substantial group of us who understand how dangerous this is to every property owner, to every industry, to every individual's personal rights in the country. The EPA seems to be absolutely determined under Ms. McCarthy to put this rule out this year and to enforce it. Whether we use the appropriations process to slow them down, try to statutorily slow them down, the biggest challenge here is they have a number of people in the United States Senate who share, apparently, the director's perspective. I suspect the president would not have made her director of the EPA if they didn't have a common attitude. This is just going to be a long, hard fight. That ability to cut off the money, and we have to have an appropriations process by which we can compel the president to cut off the money and still get it through the United States Senate, where we don't have enough votes to overcome a filibuster, it's going to be a tough year in regards, Ron. But this is a real threat to everyone who does anything in this country.
I guess a similar battle, and I'm sure that you'll have a chance to maybe query some of your constituents next week when you do town hall meetings, is in regards to Obamacare. This seems to be very, very much an issue that the GOP wants to tackle, but not quite sure how to do it.
In the budget resolution that will pass this week, it sets up a mechanism to force a vote that would use something called budget reconciliation process. That doesn't require 60 votes in the Senate. Now, whether that'll be the vehicle or not, but I would also note, Ron, many people expect the Supreme Court sometime in the next month or two or three to issue a ruling on whether a big portion of how Obamacare funds these exchanges is legal. If the U.S. Supreme Court throws that out, then that blows a big political economic hole in Obamacare, and we have to address that. So I think we're on the verge of seeing some real action on Obamacare, ironically coming now at the fifth anniversary of the president signing this rather hastily created, poorly drafted, difficult to implement piece of legislation into law 5 years ago.
Other things going on, you know, within rural America and whatnot, you know, it seems like the one thing Mr. Conaway has done for sure since he's taken over chairmanship following you, he got busy. They've had a plethora, a whole bunch of committee hearings here in the early days of 2015.
Oh, absolutely. And in all fairness to Mike, he came into a situation where like the overall turnover in Congress, a huge number of new members on the committee, people that needed to be educated about not only what's happening or what will happen, but how did we get to this point? Plus, once we finished the 2.5 farm bill process, you noted that the committee was essentially exhausted in 2014. Now we've had time to get our breath, and Mike is using the power of the hearing process to put the spotlight on good things and some things that maybe aren't so good to build the case to launch into his legislative agenda in 2015.
One other area, Congressman, I know that USDA, another part of that 2014 Farm Bill implementation process, they did just announce these grants for this these pilot projects to basically compel folks, if they're going to get food stamps, they work. And I know that was one of those pieces of the nutrition puzzle that you had to have in order to get this bill across the finish line.
It was one of the most important parts of the 2014 Farm Bill. Give 10 states the ability to demonstrate that they could require able-bodied adults without dependents to work for their food stamp assistance, for their SNAP assistance, and to allow the 10 states to have a very free hand in how they would create programs, requiring a work program or education programs, but making people, in effect, earn their help from the taxpayers. Most of us view food stamps as a hand reaching out in a difficult circumstance, not a permanent assistance program, but helping people in tough times get their life together, get back on the economic ladder, get going. This 10-state pilot project, and I hope that 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe all 10 states will come up with good ideas then that can ultimately be implemented into the next Farm Bill. This is, from a scientist perspective, this is the most important petri dish when it comes to nutrition that we've had in 50 years. I have faith in the states, and that's why it was so important that it be voluntary, that states who want to participate in the program be able to do it, because they'll come up with good ideas and they'll make them work. The programs, that is.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Frank Lucas of Oklahoma's 3rd Congressional District, past chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and still working on a lot of issues very important for rural America. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.